It's really difficult for me to talk about this because my whole life is connected to raising children and ministering to children and investing in them. So my whole existence has now got to be put into 20-something minutes of sharing with you. So that's great that I get the opportunity to do that, but I also want to ask you to fully engage in this, because you might not be a parent now. You might be a grandparent, you might have been a child and be part of a family, but I believe there's something in this for everybody. So I'm trusting the Holy Spirit will just speak into who you are and how you could share your life and be intentional with young people as part of this community. So you've got to start with start off children on the way they should go, and even when they're old, they will never turn from it. Proverbs 22, verse 6. Train a child in the way they'll go, and they won't depart from it. I always learned that one. And I actually think it's a shame it doesn't say, I'm sorry to change the Bible, it's a shame it doesn't say, train a child in the way they should go, and they will thrive because of it. Because I think the church tries to keep children and young people and teenagers rather than focus on trying to see them thrive and have life in its fullness. And I think it's a mentality in the church, the big church, to try and find ways to keep young people. And actually, I think there's an inspiration, really, to see them become ambassadors, like Noel was talking about in this society. Ambassadors go and they bring a different culture to a place. A Roman ambassador would go and shape the culture to be like Rome. And I think it would be great to train our young people to grow in that. So, I thought we'd cover three things. The first thing is how do we train young people in faith? There are two models connected to children's faith development. So I'm just going to share one with you. I thought we'd look at how people in the Old and New Testament raised children and then share some of the life together and be intentional as part of this community. Being a kids worker, I've got some objects. there's two quite well-known models of what of child spiritual development. One by Fowler and this one by Westerhoff. And he's an American minister who studied and speaks about how young people grow in faith. So he uses a picture of a tree, and he says that a tree, even just a few days old, is still a tree in its completeness. And as it grows, it matures like the rings on a tree. And he says that young people begin their faith journey as experiencing faith. So the center of the tree, the one-year-old tree, is that moment where they experience it. So they come into the church community and they feel loved and they feel valued and they sense and explore what faith means in terms of how tangible it is to them. So we as a community create an environment here that allows our young people to experience faith. We have mini transformers, which is happening just behind you. And we call that a nest, because we think a nest is a great picture of a place of security and safety that's been built and created to nurture young birds, or young children in this case. And that the adult bird takes in a depthy truth and gives it simply to young people. I know that the analogy of a bird eating worms and sticking them into the nest is not the best picture, but the idea that you take something profound and you deliver it simply is what's happening in those rooms now. And what happens when we have coffee and you engage with young people, they feel, they sense, they experience that warmth and that sense of God's love. And then Westerhoff explains that they grow and they have a more affiliative faith. That means they adopt it. They feel like they belong here. This is their church. They come to church on Sunday. They sit on little chairs down here or with their family. They know people. They serve, get a drink from the drinks counter. Okay, we sing this sort of song, Shine from the Inside Out. We come in and the culture and the pattern means that they begin to see this as their church, and this is their place that they belong. And then the next phase happens where actually they search. And that's that exploring phase, that questioning phase, that phase where they test and weigh things. So they've been growing up in a home where things have been true, but now they're going to work out if that's really true in this big community. Is that really true? Is that really true at school? Is that really... And they weigh up and question. And this is the area that churches really struggle with, because searching, exploring, and questioning are sometimes our young people in the early teenage years can go from, I don't believe in God at all, to I really believe in God and I don't believe in God at all. And they've got all these depthy questions that they need to weigh within the faith community, within this church community. And it's hard for me, because we really struggle to get people to invest time in our young people who are in this phase. We really struggle to get youth leaders on a Sunday, and we really struggle to get youth leaders on a Friday who are willing to share their life and be intentional in seeing these young people have these questions and share how we've got, how our faith works in this secular society. We need people, and as a church, we're struggling with that. And I'm just hoping that there's ways of growing our young people that involve more than just the mum and the dad in a family unit, that actually this searching faith can be addressed by us all. And then the last phase that Westerhoff talks about is an owned faith, which is like putting the bark on. It says, this is my faith, this is what I believe, and I'm going to share it with other people. It doesn't mean that you don't still have this needing a sense of love and care and experience here. It doesn't mean that you don't belong here and feel a sense of belonging. It certainly doesn't mean that you won't have questions and things you want to grapple with, but you own your faith. And we want our young people to grow in all of those things. But when they're in the searching phase, they really do need to know that love and acceptance here. And they really do need to know that they belong here. So this is his model. Is it perfect model? Probably not. He's actually put it in strands now. But when we look at the Old and New Testament, you see these elements in the way that the God's people have helped the young people to grow up. In Deuteronomy 6, 4 to 9, it says, Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength. These commandments that I give you today are to be on your hearts. Impress them on your children. Talk about them when you sit at home and when you walk along the road, when you lie down and when you get up. Tie them as symbols on your hands and bind them on your foreheads. Write them on the door frames of your houses and on your gates. And I put a little picture there of a tefillin, which is a couple of boxes that young Jewish boys would wear. And basically, they would put a box on their arm and a box on their head, and they would tie it round with leather straps. And in the box, there was this verse and another verse from Deuteronomy later that's very similar. And there's also some verses from Exodus. And they would put the verses in the tefillin box, and they would carry them around with them as a picture of that message. Basically, they're saying, with my whole body, my strength, my muscle, I'm going to put one on my arm. God, I'm going to love you with all of my strength. And with the one on the head, they're saying, God, I'm going to love you with all of my mind. And it's a visual picture that shows people that that's what they're committed to. And I think we need to be quite intentional with the way that we help our young people grow. And although I don't want them to tie boxes to their arms and heads, there's something about explaining the Bible in real ways in our life and being deliberate about that. I have a friend who carries these cards around. I don't know if you've seen these cards. And several years ago, our church handed out 52 little cards with Bible verses on. And he carries them around in his pocket, and wherever he goes, he just pulls one out and shares a story with you connected to the Bible. And so wherever he goes in life, whether it's with this Christian family or with anybody, he will pop out a Bible verse and just apply it to his life now with you. He's really intentional about taking these things like a tefillin and going to places and deliberately sharing things about God with people. And although you might not all wish to carry a load of cards around, there's something about having something that prompts you to keep God in be intentional in those moments that I think is quite important. And in the Old Testament, they understood that. Even more, they understood that it's not just a family thing. So I bought a Russian doll here. There we go. It's a bit that takes a fiddle. So, here's a child. They're part of a family. We put one Russian doll in another Russian doll. They're part of a mum and a dad and brothers and sisters. But the Old Testament family, they wouldn't have necessarily seen that as being the family. They'd have had a next level of family, which would have been the slaves in the house, the neighbours, grandma and granddad, other people who are important in the life of that family. That is the family unit as part of an Old Testament family, the batab, which is my best Hebrew. This is the family household. And when it talks about household, it's not just talking about that little nuclear family that in our society we see as today. It's much bigger than that. So when we're talking about faith development, and we're talking about that verse from Deuteronomy, actually their understanding is of a much bigger picture of family than we have now. But even that's not as big as they actually see it. The mishpachor, the clan, is the next one, which is like another Russian doll in another Russian doll. So the child is part of this. This is like us. We are the mishpachor. We are this kinship group that want to grow in faith. We want to see our young people grow in faith. We want them to be the best they can be, and we want to share truth with them. As a family, me, Kath, and Josie and Ella, we want you to help us grow. So we want to grow, and also we want you to help our children to grow. So I hope you know them. I hope you can meet them. I want you to share your life with them, your testimonies with them. I want you to inspire them. And lots of you do. I'm looking around. There's some people that I don't necessarily know, but there are other people here who have invested in my children and invested in other people's children here. But they're actually part of this family. And then there's another one, another Russian doll size, which is the tribe, or the Shabbat, which is, so when Old Testament people understood family, they understood the whole thing. So when one person sins from one tribe, it affects from one family household, it affects the clan, which affects the tribe. When one person has something to celebrate, the whole tribe celebrate, the whole church celebrate, the whole of God's people celebrate. So you might be sitting here thinking, well, I'm not a parent, I'm not raising children, but actually, we really need you to, as a person attending this church, coming to join in. We really want you to be intentional and share your life with young people that are part of this church. Jump to the New Testament. The story that I really like is the story when Jesus is left at the temple. So Mary and Joseph, as part of the Passover celebration, they take Jesus to Jerusalem. And the Passover celebration would probably have been 7 days. You definitely had to be there for the first few days, but probably took 7 days of time. And then Mary and Joseph went back to Nazareth, and Jesus was left in the temple, and he was sharing with great scholars and teachers. And then Mary and Joseph realized and went back and got him, and he was obedient and said that he would come back to Nazareth with them. I like that story because, firstly, Joseph would have been quite poor. He would have. It would have been a big commitment for him to stop for 7 days and take his whole family to Jerusalem and pay for. Well, they probably would have stayed with family, but that have that issue of cost where he's not earning. So he put spiritual customs and his spiritual life of his family before his worldly wealth. And sometimes I think, as the church family, we need to take time to invest in the spiritual development of our family. And sometimes it can be costly. And I think Joseph took Mary and Jesus to Jerusalem because he knew it was of great value to him. I also like the fact that Jesus went and sat in the midst of people that he could learn from. Well, I think he's an inspiration to our young people and our children, that they opt in and find people of faith, people who can share testimony with them, people who they actually follow his example and find those places in this church family that they can connect with. I like the fact that Jesus, when they did arrive back, because they obviously hadn't missed him because they're part of a huge family, a big family, when they realized he wasn't actually with them days later, they go back. Well, it would be, wouldn't it? Because they believe in the big family. Whereas we probably wouldn't leave a child for a day not knowing where they are, but they understood that this was a big thing. And they go back and get him, and he, although he says, of course I'm here, I'm in the Father's house, actually he's obedient and go back to Nazareth with them. And then it says this about Jesus. It says he grew in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and all the people. And I find it amazing that that's what Jesus had to do. He had to go and dwell in places where truth was being shared. He had to go on these places and grow in his physical body, but also grow spiritually in his understanding of who he is as a man, as well as God on earth. That actually he had to grow. And it wasn't in Jerusalem that he grew. He grew with obedience when he went back to be with his family unit in Nazareth, in that faith community, in that community at that time. And I love the fact that that Mary says she held these things in her heart, because there's something about me looking at my children going, I want the best for them. I want them to shine as brightly as they can with God and grow up as amazing young people with God. Something in my heart wants to call out the best in them. And I'm sure that's true of every parent here, and probably true of your parents who grew you. Suppose, and helped you to develop. But often we focus our finances and our time on things like education or on social interactions and learning manners and things. And actually, how much do we invest in the spiritual development of our family and our young people and our children? What do we put sacrifice so that they can really grow? Right, last section. I think we need to share our life with young people, and we need to be intentional about doing that. So this artist is a Chinese artist called Lu Belin, and that's my best Chinese. And as you can see, he has painted himself to look like the background behind him. And I think we often do this as people. We blend into our culture rather than being explicit to our young people about why we're doing things and what we're doing. So there's one picture of Lu Belin. There he is, next to some logs. If you're listening online, you can Google Lu Belin, and you'll see some pictures of a man standing near some logs blending in. And there he is near a Hollywood sign. Here he is near some shelves. You kind of can't believe he's actually there, or this is really real, can you now? Just to prove it, they haven't painted his face yet. You can hardly see him, can you? There we are, just to prove they are actually painting him. My daughter Ella and her friend, they have this phrase that they say. They go, blend in, and then both of them have to run and try and hide like this. And so you go, suddenly at any moment they go, blend in! And they don't actually hide, they just kind of go like this. And there's just some sense in me that when we go about our life, we blend in with the culture that we're part of. We take our children to places, or we come here and we blend in and don't actually show those cultural differences, those distinctives that our young people need to see. I think adults can catch those differences, but I think children need to be trained in them. We need to start them in these good things. We need to explain to them what's going on. We don't need to blend in, because they're going to copy us, and then they're going to imitate us, and then they're going to work out whether this is the kind of thing they want to do. So I'd like to show you a video. This is the moment, Chris. Oh, it's an Evian advert. You may have seen it. It's good. Obviously, I could have just said that they copy you, but I thought it's a waste of a good video if we don't show the video. There's something about us being role models and being explicit about what we're doing and why we're doing it that's quite important. It reminds me of a couple of stories. The first one is from when I was about 13 or 14. A lady had become a Christian in our church family, and she brought her children to church. And it was a little chapel, and it was quite hard to see the front, so she would stand her children on the chairs so that they could see over the top of the adults' heads, and then she would explain to them what's going on. So she'd say, oh, this is the song about Jesus, and when we're singing these words, that's what this means. When they're talking about a crown of glory, this is what that means. And she would help them, and people are putting their hands up because they want to say how much they love God, and she'd just stand next to them and coach them in worship. And she was really careful to make sure they were fully included and part of that church family. And even as a 14-year-old who was just about becoming involved in kids ministry, I spotted something in her that meant she wanted her young people to really grasp what this community is about. Another one that was quite tricky for me was we took our family to Thailand to go to see where Josie was born, but also to go up to Chiang Mai to help in a children's home, which is on the border of Burma and Thailand. But as part of that trip, we wanted them to experience what that's like to go and do something like that. But as part of that trip, we were in Bangkok and we walked up some stairs to go over a bridge over the road. And there was a lady begging. And next to her was a little 18-month-year-old begging as well. And I saw Ella, my youngest child, go up the stairs and stand and stare at this lady, as if something in her heart said, what on earth is a lady begging on the street with a tiny little one? And she just stopped. And I said, come on, Ella, let's keep going. And you could see that what she wanted to do was take some money and give it to this lady. And, of course, in my head, I'm thinking that's not the most useful thing. We could give it to the proper charity that's going to support the families like this and take them out of this situation. And I got a whole strategic plan of the way you should use the money to bless this family. But there was a moment that I missed. And that moment I missed was a chance to grow in Ella a compassion, a reaction to that compassion, and to value the compassion she had inside. I missed it. And we scooped her up, and I can't get that moment back. But I need to be more intentional, and I need the Holy Spirit to stir in me the same emotions that Ella had. Because it wasn't about the lady getting the money. It was about Ella reacting to God's compassion in her life. So I want to be intentional with my children and the children of some of you, actually, that I get to be part of their lives as a kids minister here. It's a challenge. So we've done a few intentional things as a family. It's a bit odd to share, but here we go. We do a book where we share our hopes and things that we've really enjoyed from the previous year. So it's got some photos in and some reflections from the year and what we've really enjoyed. And we have a meal together and we just share about what's been really important in our lives. And we try and include things connected to our faith and how we've grown in our faith as a family. Another thing that we've done is the secondary school that Josie goes to. I've been doing some training on internet safety, and they've been talking about don't do this and be careful about this and watch out for this, and it's really dangerous, this bit, and the sense of fear that came through the internet safety, something stirred in me and said, actually, I don't want my children to grow up with that culture of fear connected to things online, but I do want them to be safe. But I want them a culture of freedom where they can be transformers. They can be examples online as well, so that their faith is in both worlds, which for them is one world, but for me is still two worlds. So we created a little book that we gave to Josie, which has basically got internet information safety stuff mixed in with Bible verses and messages to her that say how much we value her and how important she is and how we want the best for her and how we want her to keep talking to us. And it's got things like 1 Corinthians 13, which is about love and how to be online in a way that shows love. And we've just written messages to her about being a shining light, because at the time we gave it to her, when she was 13, we went on Facebook together and we talked it all through. She'd listened to us then. I'm really hoping she'll still listen when she's 15 and 16, but we took a moment to be intentional. And there's something about these stories that mean that we do need to share life together and be more intentional. So Catherine Donaldson spoke to me a few weeks ago and said, I'd really like to share some of the things we do in our house, some of the resources I've got in my house, with people at church if they're interested. And I went, oh, that's great. Why don't you do it when I'm talking about raising children? So she set up a table in the coffee area, which is not just for parents. It's for anyone who wants to go and have a look at things that she's got that she's seen used in her family with Alex and Eleanor, those things that have inspired those two children and been part of their family life. And she'd like to share a little bit about those things with you if you potter over with a cup of tea and a coffee. Another thing, that a story that particularly was key for me, was when Kath and I I think we'd just been married, and we were at James and Marion's house, and we went to their house, and they have two children, and they would come in as young children and hang out with us. And James and Marion had set up a culture in their house that meant that their two children were being trained, I suppose, or encouraged to start asking questions with us and talking with us and asking how we are and engaging in relationship and being part of the Bloy Smith welcome team. And I remember leaving with Kath going, if we have children, I'd like them to be like them. I'd like them to be the sort of young people that welcome people into the home and talk to you, and are the sort of people that are part of our family thing when people arrive. Yeah, that's great. They're all kind of examples of small families, but actually we're a big family, and some of you are going, well, I sometimes come here, but actually we really need you. We really need you to be part of this whole community to invest in young people. And that might look different for different people in the room. So while we'll just share the last few bits, I just ask that the Holy Spirit just nudges something in you. How could you be involved in supporting our young people? How could you connect with families that are here? How can families here invite other people? There's there's some things that happen in the life of this church that are really important, like the Christmas celebrations and the baptisms that we have and Easter services. There's those rites of passage that happen and those moments in our church family that children are part of, like the Remembrance Sunday we've just had with our young people together. One particularly was this, that was quite recent, where Annalie was dedicated. And together as a church family, we supported Ben and Charlotte, and we prayed with them, and we said a promise that this is what Ben and Charlotte said, and then we said this: gathered here as members of this congregation and as representatives of the wider Church of God, Will you promise to offer Annalie and her family your love and support? And being faithful in prayer, will you share your faith with her by word and example? And for Kath and I, that promise is quite a big promise, because there's a family that we knew where the three children, they lost their mum and their dad. And we'd made this promise when those children were dedicated here. And mum and dad are no longer with them. They're with grandparents. And we would bring these young people here because we recognized that we were part of that love and support and faithful in prayer. And we wanted to be an example to them. And it just hits home every time we make that promise that we as a community are saying we want to value you. We want you to grow in faith as part of this church family. We want you to belong here, and we want you to ask those searching questions. And that involves not just the little nuclear family in the center of a Russian doll. It involves everybody around being able to share testimony, share what God's doing in your life, and be honest and open and transparent with our young people. It does need people to volunteer and get involved, but actually it needs us to be intentional about the way we bring up our young people. I started with a tree. This is when I can't find the piece of paper I need. Started with a tree, and I'm going to finish with this. So there's some great verses in Jeremiah 17 that say this: "Cursed is the one who trusts in man, who draws strength from mere flesh, and whose heart turns away from the Lord. That person will be like a bush in the wastelands. They will not see prosperity when it comes. They will dwell in parched places of the desert, in salt land where no one lives." So we don't want our young people to be blown around. We want them to be rooted. But "blessed is the one who trusts in the Lord, whose confidence is in him. They will be like a tree planted by the water that sends out its roots by the stream. It does not fear when heat comes. Its leaves are always green. It has no worries in a year of drought and never fails to bear fruit." That's what I want for our young people. That's what I want for you. That's what I want for me. I want to be the tree that's near living water, that doesn't struggle when heat comes and my leaves are always green. That's what I want to be. And so I'm going to finish by saying this, which is from Ephesians 3. And it says, "I pray that you, being rooted and established in love, may have power, together with all the Lord's holy people, to grasp how wide and long and high and deep is the love of Christ, and to know this love that surpasses knowledge, that you may be filled to the measure of all the fullness of God." I want our young people to be rooted and established here in this church family. We're part of it together. And together with all the Lord's holy people. That's us. And I want to see the fullness of God in our young people from the very start to the most mature in this place. Okay, so if you'd like to stand, we're going to sing a song. And in some ways, I'd like the Holy Spirit just to speak to you, to just say, how can I be involved in seeing our young people and seeing each other, actually, by sharing life together and being intentional in that.